Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. Let's take a moment to thank today's sponsor, designcrowd.com. Have you ever considered starting your own business or launching a startup? If the answer is yes, then you're probably going to want a great logo design as well as a website made. This is where designcrowd.com can help. Here's how it works. Step one, simply visit designcrowd.com/hack. You will get your special offer for being a listener. Then you just post a brief description describing the design that you need. For example, a brand new logo. Step two, DesignCrowd will then open your project to their 500,000 designers to respond to your offer. Step three, within hours, you will receive your first design, and over the course of the next 3 to 10 days, a typical project will receive 60 to 100 different designs from designers around the world. Step four, you then simply pick the best design that you like and the designers will get paid. As a special bonus, if you do not find a design you want, absolutely no problem. The risk is not on you. DesignCrowd has a money-back guarantee. Crowdsourcing design on DesignCrowd helps you access the collective creativity of hundreds of thousands of designers that will save you money, time, and resources and help you find the best designs possible. Check out designcrowd.com/hack. That's designcrowd.com/hack. And you'll get up to $100 off your very next project.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a launch therapist, green smoothie enthusiast, and an entrepreneur. Growing up in an entrepreneurial family, my guest decided early on that she wanted something different. So she went to college for music performance. But halfway through her degree, she accidentally started a business and realized she was indeed an entrepreneur. This realization caused her to switch her major and get herself an MBA. She has now been in business for over 8 years and is the founder of Yogipreneur and is also a successful business coach and consultant. Now, let's hack. Rachel Cook. Before we get rolling here, I want to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, Braintree. I know you remember the first dollar you made in business. It's a hard thing to forget. It's one of the greatest parts of being an entrepreneur. And now you want to grow until your business makes your millionth or billionth dollar. But have you found the right payments partner to grow with you? Braintree lets you accept every way to pay. From PayPal to Apple Pay and everything in between. All it takes is one simple integration. And it doesn't matter what currency your customers use because Braintree lets you accept over 130 of them. To learn more about how you and your company can grow with Braintree, visit BraintreePayments.com/hack. That's BraintreePayments.com/hack. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have another very, very special guest, Rachel. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, John. I'm so excited to chat with you today.
Oh, very cool. It's absolutely my pleasure. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Me too.
Nice. Let's do it. Rachel, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
This is such a good question. And I think I could have a lot of different answers for this. But if I were to really look back at what I've done over the past 8 years in business, I think the biggest thing is honestly just showing up consistently. And for me, that's something that I know this is the least sexy answer I could possibly give, right? Just show up every single week in somebody's inbox or whatever you're doing, just keep doing that thing. But I mean, I run a program, Sweet Spot Strategy, that I've been running for over 5 years now. I show up in people's inboxes every Sunday. Like, I choose something and I stick to it for a very, very long time. And I think that has helped me to stand out, because there's just so much noise out there that when you don't show up consistently, people forget about you and you blend in to the background. So showing up consistently, I wish I could just tell people that is the only thing you need to do is show up, but people don't want that. It's not sexy, right? It's not exciting, but it's the truth.
Right. And I mean, it's almost like you gave two answers maybe. Cause like even the idea of it being like the least sexy answer, I don't know if like your one thing that could really truly be your one thing could be a sexy answer and actually be the thing that works. Do you know what I mean?
It has exactly
to be something. And I mean, Seth Godin wrote a whole book, I believe, The Dip. I mean, it's about most people, they show up consistently until it gets kind of hard and then they stop.
And exactly.
So is this something you've always been able to do? Like, you've been 8 years at this game, Rachel. Is this something you've sort of grown into not stopping? Because otherwise, you see it all around you. I see it within myself. Like, you get a cool idea, you start, and 2 months into it, yeah. And then it's like, oh, it's not getting the traction I want, so I'm going to just stop.
Yeah, I'm definitely, there's some people who are sprinters who go after an idea like full out the whole way, and they just are explosive in their energy. I'm not like that. I'm definitely the tortoise, not the hare. So I've always been kind of that slow and steady approach to things, mainly because it's just my personality. Like, I've always known that, I mean, in all honesty, I'm not the fastest person on the planet. You don't want to ever see me run. You would laugh so hard. But slow and steady has always gotten me where I want to go. And so it's just kind of partly infused in my personality and partly just, it's what makes sense to me. So yeah, I would say it pretty much has been the biggest thing to help me out my entire career. Probably where it gets challenging is when I do need those bursts of energy, because then I've got to really dig deep. And, you know, like if you're launching something, that's when you need to be the hare, not the tortoise. You need that big push of energy. But even then, I will plan that so far in advance so that I don't have to push really hard, because I know myself. I know that I'm not somebody who can just run full speed at something. I'm like, I like a nice cruising pace that fits me the best. And so I think knowing yourself is a big part of that. Like, I've definitely worked with people or had clients who are very much the hare and the whole business game. And they run into that wall over and over again of like, they run so fast and then they completely run out of steam. And so then we almost have to trick them into being more tortoise-like. Like, we literally use all that time and energy when they're in that mode of just massive creativity, or they just have this huge idea and it's just flooding out of them. We use it that time to get it all out and then actually drip it out like they were a tortoise. Like, we create all the content at once and then drip it out over time or whatever it might be, because I know that that consistency part is so crucial. So yeah, it's been a big part of what I do, and it's a big part of how I help a lot of people to stay in this for a long time.
Yeah, and the tortoise and the hare analogy makes sense. But then you said about clients. So you have this like keen sort of self-awareness of yourself as the person who's not the sprinter. You like to sort of take that cruise. And then you said working with clients. Does it seem to be common working with clients that people don't self-identify properly with either being a tortoise or a hare?
I think once they hear that concept or they start to pay more attention, they do pretty quickly. I think it's just hard because there's the Gary Vaynerchuks of the world out there who is very much a hare, you know, and he's just an anomaly. Like, there are some people who are just like that. Like, that is how it's in their DNA. But he's also very self-aware and he tells people all the time, right? Like, you're not going to be able to outwork me. It's just not possible. So I think it's just really important for people. I start to see this usually when people are like at year two or year three, that's when they start to hit that burnout or that overwhelm or that feeling of like, okay, why is this not just clicking? And it's because they've chosen the wrong strategy. Like, they're really a tortoise, but they're trying to act like a hare, or they're a hare and they don't know how to make things work in a more consistent way on the front end of their business and their marketing, et cetera. So yeah, the self-awareness piece is huge. And as entrepreneurs, it's the biggest card you have to play is understanding how you work and how you do what you do best. And if you can figure that out, you will just do so incredibly well because you're not fighting yourself the whole time.
Right, right. And as much as Gary Vaynerchuk wants to tell people about the self-awareness and that you can't outwork, it's still, I think a lot of people, even if they are sort of aware that they're the tortoise, they think they should be able to push themselves to become that Gary Vaynerchuk. And you're right, nobody can. It's just not possible.
It's just really hard. And I don't see a lot of people. I mean, we're in this interesting space right now where there's this flood of especially people online who 5 years seems ancient, right? Like if you've been running your online business for 5 years, then you've been in here for a long time. But I come from a family of entrepreneurs. My parents have run businesses for over 40 years. So I've seen what happens when you burn yourself out and you're trying to be an entrepreneur. And I'm in this to continue doing it for another 30 or 40 years. And I think that's kind of just a different perspective, is getting out of our little bubble that we have here and instead looking at how the rest of the world runs a business.
Yeah. And so that's an interesting segue into like a family of entrepreneurs, and then you got your MBA in entrepreneurship. But let's go back, if we can, to wherever that point was. It doesn't always make sense going through it, but looking back, it usually does. But there seems to be that time in every entrepreneur's life when they've realized one of two things. Either they had this calling to make this huge difference, or they found that they simply couldn't work for somebody else and were sort of born an entrepreneur. So could you tell me, Rachel, what side of the fence you see yourself on? And then take us back to sort of when you realized that.
So the interesting thing about being born to a family of entrepreneurs is you're still likely going to rebel against your family like everyone else. And that's kind of what I went through. My parents were very different type of entrepreneurs than I am. I'm a very nerdy, bookwormy type of person. I grew up, you know, all straight A's, et cetera. I thought I was going to go into academia. And my dad is the typical, like in my hometown, he's basically the mayor of the hometown. I mean, he just can charm the pants off anybody. And that's how he built his business, was on sheer charisma, you know, and just being able to talk to anybody and help anybody. And I was not that way. I was not extroverted. I was extremely introverted. I was happiest when I was honestly like playing my French horn with my friends from orchestra. I was such a, not what you would think of as a typical entrepreneur. But what happened was I actually went originally for music performance to university. And about 2 years in, I started catering all of the performances for my school of music, because you have to give a junior and senior recital. And your friends and your family all come to it. So you have this reception afterwards. And I was like, well, I don't want to have a job. I could cater. I love to cook. So I started catering for all my friends. And that was kind of my first realization that, oh, this is something I get really well. I started
a business while trying to rebel against starting a business.
I know. Exactly. And so by then I was like, well, I really don't think I'm going to hack it as a professional French horn player. And I decided to switch to the School of Business and Entrepreneurship. And that's when I just realized, like, okay, where my dad was very charismatic and like a natural salesperson, I got things like systems, and I understood strategy, and I understood how to put the pieces of the puzzle together. So for a long time, I actually thought I was going to be like a great operations person, like a COO to somebody else's, you know, charismatic CEO. But I just realized as I got more and more into it that more businesses actually need to understand and learn the strategy and the systems and how to actually make all the pieces of the puzzle work together. Because most entrepreneurs are idea people, right? Like this is what I see with a lot of my clients. They have all these amazing ideas. They have this huge vision. They have a message they want to get out. But it's the nitty-gritty behind the scenes stuff that trips them up. And that's totally something that I understand. I can see how those pieces of the puzzle fall together. So yeah, I fought against entrepreneurship because I didn't think I could be like my dad, but it turned out there was a role for me that really played to those kind of nerdy, spreadsheet-loving side without having to go out and like talk in front of the whole chamber of commerce and have everybody rolling on the floor laughing. Like that wasn't going to happen.
So there's different types of entrepreneurs.
There are different types.
There's different types of people.
I know. And it's so funny because you don't know things growing up, right? And I was just surrounded by my parents' world. And honestly, like all their friends were entrepreneurs, but they were all the same. They were also charismatic and outgoing and people. But this is old. I mean, they come from an old school world where if you were going to grow a business, you had to go meet everybody in the community and you were going door to door and you were having sales calls and you were having all these meetings and you were speaking in front of a lot of people all the time. There weren't very many people at that, you know, at least that I could see, who were creating the behind the scenes and running it as their business. They were always working for someone else. And I think that's the beauty of what's happened. I remember when my dad hired his first business coach, I was in high school and he was telling me about this, you know, work he was doing with this business coach. And I was like, hold on, what? You mean you just talked about strategic planning? Like, I can do that. I'm really good at checklists. Let's figure this out. And so that was my first realization. And this was the 90s, you know, like coaching was such a new industry. It's still a really new industry, but the coaching and consulting world was something that I realized was there for me. And it was a perfect fit.
I love it. I love it. Was there ever a thought when you're taking music performance and you're realizing that, wow, I just started a business while I'm doing this. I actually really like this. This is what I should be doing. Was there ever a thought of just dropping out and starting a business rather than switching to entrepreneurship as an academic?
Oh, no. Cause I'm a nerd. I wanted that MBA. Yeah. I still have on my board here that I've got to go for the PhD.
Wow.
One of my big issues with the entrepreneurship world, especially in school, and because I've gone through an entrepreneurial MBA program, I see this so much, and it's probably changed since I graduated like 10 years ago with my MBA. But one of the challenges I had was most people teaching business in university have never actually run a business. And on the flip side, most people who were in business school with me were interested in running a business. And we're seeing how much the economy is shifting towards people becoming like freelancers and running their own small businesses instead of going to work for a big corporation. MBAs are geared towards putting you in that world, you know, and it's not as applicable. So I would love to get my PhD in entrepreneurship and actually go back and teach as a, maybe not a full-time professor or anything, but as, just to bring real world experience in this kind of new economy instead of constantly having these people who just study entrepreneurship or business from a very high level, you know, completely hands-off. I really struggled with that because as I was trying to learn things, I just felt like, how come you don't know this? I remember when I first started working with the Small Business Institute as a consultant, I was just amazed at how much I didn't know because we didn't teach, you know, we weren't taught the actual ins and outs of running a small business. We were taught how to have a big vision and how to talk about business law or contracts, but we weren't taught like, okay, how do you actually go have a sales conversation? How do you actually get more people into your business? And at the end of the day, that's what really gets your business off the ground.
Yeah. And I mean, as a perspective, sort of, it's almost better that they're not trying to teach things that they don't know, like going and making a sales call. Cause it would be so like, oh, okay, this, no, you've never done this, have you? You're telling me you have, but so, but I agree that it sort of probably misses that real world aspect, which you can probably bring to it, which is really awesome and will help so many other students. But that's cool. So as the nerd, you were staying in school. That was just it. And you're going to go get your PhD. Okay. I love it.
If I could stay in school and, well, I did get paid for it. I got paid to get my MBA. So if I could get paid to get my PhD, I'll do that too.
Nice. I love it. All right. So your one thing is just that ability to show up consistently. But now we've also learned that you're really good at operations. So now every blog post expert talks about the 80-20 rule in business. Do 20%, get 80% of the results, do what you're good at, and delegate the rest. Rachel, besides being outgoing and that sort of like very extroverted person, can you tell me something that you are absolutely not good at in your business?
What I'm absolutely not good at is, and this is so funny because I also, like, you teach what you most need to practice, right? So one of the biggest things that I've always struggled with this is just being a workaholic. Like, I can get so into it and get so focused in on whatever I'm creating that I have a really hard time pulling myself away from it. So I've had to create systems and create structure and boundaries to get away from my business sometimes, because I will just sit in front of the computer and suddenly 8 hours fly by and I realize I didn't eat lunch. is totally normal for me. So that's probably the biggest thing, is knowing that it's not all going to get done today, and that's all right. You're not ever going to have a completely finished to-do list when you're an entrepreneur, in all honesty. It's just always going to be ongoing. But you have to know when it's time to just step away from the keyboard and step away from the computer and go actually live your life. That's probably the biggest thing I struggle with, is just enjoying, even though the whole reason I built my business the way I built it was for my lifestyle, so that I could have time with my kids who are really young, so I could pick them up from the bus, you know, at the same time they get home from the bus and I'm still thinking about whatever I was working on. So pulling myself away from it is probably my biggest challenge. And it's something I've really had to learn and create structure around to enjoy the life that I purposefully am trying to build for myself.
Yeah, that's something lots of us struggle with. And it's like work-life balance, which is something I don't totally believe in necessarily, but I do believe in, like, when you're doing one thing, do it. Like, so like when you're working, work, right? But when you're picking up your kids from school, be picking up your kids from school. And sort of like, mostly to me, it's just turning off things on my phone. Like, I can't get email on my phone anymore. Those kind of basic things. Otherwise, it's like, oh, there's an email. It's like, well, I can get that in 2 hours. It's fine.
Yeah.
But it's hard, especially, again, back to that whole Gary Vaynerchuk thing. I mean, we see the hustle and we think that, well, we're getting somewhere and I could get there in 6 months, or I could get there in 2 months if I just work a lot more. But that's not always necessarily true, depending.
But you might have taken horrible care of yourself and forgotten to eat most days. And then other days you're like not sleeping.
Exactly.
I found, because I've had issues with burnout in the past, that building my entire business to take better care of myself is just a huge part of what I'm always working on, because I just have such a hard time turning off like my entrepreneur brain. Like, once I'm thinking about something, right now I'm finishing up a book that's launching in a few weeks, and all I can think about is this thing. Like, I'm out there with my kids and I go on a walk with my husband and I'm like, oh, I think I should write blah, 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 blah. And my husband's like, can we talk about something else other than this book? It's just hard. It's just hard to turn it off. So we have to create structure around that in order to make sure that you can love your life as much as you love your business.
One of us is in this space is going to get like filthy rich creating like a support group for spouses of entrepreneurs who just want to talk about business and ideas and projects all the time.
Oh my gosh. And my husband left his job teaching about 2.5 years ago to come work with me. So he really gets it now. He's like, the first month he was home working with me. And tip, if you have a spouse who is a English teacher, they're really good at editing content. But the first month he was home with me, I remember he was just kind of looking at everything in my Asana project management tool. And he's like, holy cow, how do you do all this? How does your brain handle all this? I had no idea how much you've been doing for the past however many years. I'm like, I don't know, babe. It's entrepreneur wiring. Like, we can handle all the projects, all the moving parts, all the people that we have to think about. We just do it. But yeah, he gets it nonstop now.
I love it. I love it. And with an all the projects comment, this is a great segue into projects. So projects is a loose term, Rachel, but you just mentioned a new book, and I'm sure you have many other projects that it's one of these things that we sort of struggle with as entrepreneurs, right? Is what to work on next. Ideas come to us when we're on walks, when we're showering, when we read our emails, people give us ideas and project suggestions. But there's only so much time, energy, and resources. So I would love to know what your process is, Rachel, whether it's just a gut process you have or if it's a written process, but what do you go through to decide when a new project is worth your time, energy, and resources?
This is a good question, because I struggle with this just as much as anyone else. I have what I call an idea parking lot. It is a Google Doc where I just keep all those different ideas. I actually have multiple idea parking lots. Like, I'll have one for blog posts and I'll have one for products I want to create. I'll even have one for things I know I shouldn't do, but I'm hoping I'll find a client who'll do it. I have different idea parking lots for all those things, because I just know I don't have time to implement everything right now. But I am definitely still, like we said at the beginning, I'm very much the tortoise. I take my time with things. I marinate with things for a long time. And because I operate in kind of a 90-day planning cycle, which has just always worked best for me, if anybody needs to learn about how to get more stuff done, go pick up, I think it's called The 12-Week Year. It's a great book. But I keep it simple by just focusing on two or three main projects a quarter. And by just focusing on two and three main projects a quarter, I keep myself from getting overwhelmed. And I also keep myself from putting too much on my plate where you just don't get anything shipped. You don't get anything done. And those projects also include like launching something, because I launch a program twice a year. If you've ever gone through a launch to fill up a program, that's a whole project on its own. It's just so much stuff going on. So I keep it pretty simple. I have space for three projects a quarter, and I choose them very, very carefully. Usually I have an idea of at least what two of them are at the beginning of the year or a year in advance, because again, I have different programs I'm launching at different times. But when it comes to bringing a new idea to the forefront, I will kind of doodle on it for a while, because I get those ideas just like everyone else. I get them in the shower. I get them out on walks, especially whenever I'm walking, I'm always getting new ideas. And so I'll just kind of keep adding little notes into that idea parking lot until it's time to bring it out. So a great example of this is I created this year, really the first new program in probably 2 years, called Get More Clients. And I've been noodling around with this idea since last summer. So I had it sitting kind of in the back of my mind for about 6 months before I actually was like, okay, I'm actually going to create this product. And I had just been adding to it and taking notes whenever I knew, like whenever I was doing coaching calls or whenever I was running my program, if I heard people say, oh, this is what I'm struggling with, this is what I'm struggling with, I was like, oh, that's exactly what I think this program should do. And once I decided to pull the trigger on it, it actually came together really, really quickly, because I had kind of some brainstorming notes already started around it. But I do take my time. I take my time and I listen a lot. I want to make sure that it's what people want. I surveyed people. So I don't act, it might have seemed on the surface, like I know some people were like, whoa, you created this program in like a month. But really, I'd been thinking about it for over 6 months and making notes on it for a while before I decided to actually make it my quarter one project.
Which makes creation easier.
Oh, yeah.
I love the idea of the idea parking lot. And I really like just that you keep it so simple and just it's Google Doc. It's not like some separate fancy app that you have. It's like, no, it's just a Google Doc. Just dump my ideas there.
Yeah, exactly.
It's good to keep those things simple. And so as being like the tortoise, sort of moving slowly, really sort of marinating on ideas before executing, what or how do you take it when you do then put out that new program and it doesn't sort of catch with your audience the way you expect it? Would you sort of, like, do you have something you go through then to decide, well, did I just sort of market it wrong or position it wrong? Or should I just scrap that idea? Or should that now become part of like an evolution into the next quarter project?
Well, everything's an evolution, first of all. Like, there's nothing that's final. I mean, I've reiterated several of my programs multiple times just because you're always getting feedback and you're always learning how to make it better. But in this case, and I would say in most projects, I think this is a mistake that's easy to make, is to think like, wow, if it doesn't become a five-figure launch right away, then it's a total failure and I should just scrap it. But really, it's just dipping your toe in the water the first time. If you look at it from the long term, it might not only make five figures this month or this quarter, but add that up over a year. And suddenly that's a major impact in your bottom line. So for me, I'm just always looking for that validation. And even when I created this last program, it was all about validation. The first round of offering it, I only offered it to my email list. And that was the first validation step for me. It was making sure, okay, there was no fancy anything. It was like three emails. Do you want this thing I created? I created it for you based on your feedback, based on what I've been teaching. Here it is. You're the first ones to hear about it. And then the next month, I actually publicly promoted it. I actually had the webinar, et cetera, et cetera. And then a couple months later, we turned that webinar into an automated webinar system. So it took a little while to build out, but each step of the way, I was getting that validation. Like, I got the people who were already knew me, who'd already been following me, to say, yes, this is great. I want to check this out. And then I started building on to that. So I think the more you can kind of keep that long-term view, and know that the first time out the gate, it doesn't have to be a blockbuster, you know, whatever success. It can take its time and you can make it a little bit better. You can learn how to market it better when you get that feedback, because then you know exactly what they need to hear from you in order to feel confident making that buying decision. And then you can just layer on top of that. So usually I find that Most people have assets in their business that are programs they created and only launched once, or products that are sitting there kind of collecting dust in their digital bookshelf that they haven't been promoting. And if you just remember that those assets only generate revenue for you when you're working on making the marketing better, when you're working on making the product better, you will find that it's a lot easier to build a sustainable business when you're leveraging those existing assets instead of constantly trying to create new things.
I love it. I love it. And you're absolutely, absolutely right. It's hard though. It's hard when you put those things out there and they don't stick the first time, which they rarely ever do. And it is an evolution, but it's still, I think we take it personally, right? We take it as part of ourselves that we kind of put out there and it wasn't accepted in a way.
Yeah. I do a lot of what I call launch therapy with my clients because this is a big challenge. I mean, a lot of my clients they're launching programs where they really only need like 10 people in them. And it does feel incredibly challenging when you don't get those first 10 people. But again, it's all about perspective. It's all about knowing that, okay, this first time you might only have 5 people, you might only have 20 people. And that might sound really, really low to a lot of people, but it doesn't matter. Those are a few people who actually wanted what you have. And if you treat them incredibly well and focus your energy on them, they're going to give you amazing testimonials. They're going to tell you where they're stumbling. They're going to show you where you can make that thing better. They're going to give you what you need to know in order to position that program or product even better. So it's all about validation. It's all an experiment. And I think the more you can embrace that kind of, this is an experiment mindset, you take the pressure off it being like, you suck, you're not doing the best thing ever, into, okay, we're testing this idea and seeing if it flies.
Yeah. Yeah. I love launch therapy.
Yeah.
It seems like probably a very sought after thing, although we don't know it, but yeah, it's a hard thing.
I should get the URL. I mean, seriously, in a launch, it's like the middle of it is when I get the panicked text messages. Nothing's happening. What should I do right now? And I'm like, step away from the computer. Your emails are scheduled.
Breathe.
Go get a cocktail. Like, just step away. Don't do it. Because the worst thing that can happen is you get super emotional once you've already got the strategy. And I see people who are like, you know, they planned on a 2-week enrollment for something. In the middle of it, they get freaked out. They get panicked. And then they just stop everything. Like, I've literally seen people not send out their final like enrollment closing emails. And then they come to me and they're like, no one bought it. And I'm like, because you didn't send out the whole strategy. Like, you didn't do what you were supposed to do. You let your emotions get the better of you. So in a lot of ways, I mean, this is the entrepreneurial journey, right? Like, it is really emotional. It can be really hard sometimes because you can take it personally and you can feel these feelings of rejectment, but you just got to know, like, it's not about you. Try not to take it personally. And once you have a strategy in place, the best thing you can do is put on your, you know, experimenter hat and say, okay, I'm going to put the strategy out there and see how it works from A to Z before I start trying to tinker and play with it. So I can actually get a baseline. I can actually see what's happening. And then the next round you iterate.
Yeah. Such awesome advice. Such awesome advice. I love it. All right, Rachel, this has been an absolute blast. I want to wrap up, though, with you on one final question.
Okay.
It's this idea I'm working with calling the entrepreneurial gap. So you've been in business now for 8 years. You've accomplished lots of things. You have an MBA in entrepreneurship. But there's this idea of an entrepreneur gap is that as dreamers, entrepreneurs, we always, no matter what we accomplish, we never see ourselves as successful because our success always lies ahead of us, right? In 1 month when you hit that revenue goal, in 3 months when you land those clients, in 2 years when you get your PhD, that's when you'll see yourself as successful. Yeah, Rachel, both you and I know, right before you hit that, you're going to want something bigger. It's in our DNA. It just really,
yeah.
But so we just never, I think, from the outside, we look really successful. From the inside, we don't. So if you could stop right now, Rachel, and look back behind you, because you have accomplished a lot. You grew up in entrepreneurship. You didn't think you could do it. And you changed during school. And now you're 8 years into it. So with the highs, the lows, the wins, and the losses all taken into context, could you tell me how you feel about the journey up until today?
I wish it wouldn't have been so darn painful. Because for me, I mean, there were so many things that spurred me to become an entrepreneur that were less about wanting to be an entrepreneur and more like, I have to change the way that my life is. I have to change that working for someone is burning me out and making me sick. I have to change that I just can't seem to find a role that really encompasses everything that I do best. I kind of became an entrepreneur out of, I had to, you know, and I think probably a lot of other people feel the same way, but I just had to. There was nothing else that was going to work for me in the way that I wanted my life to be. So looking back over it, oh God, I wish it wasn't so painful. But at the same time, I know that each punch in the face along the way really got me to where I am. And when you look at it from that lens, it's like, okay, it could have maybe been easier, but I don't think I would have had as much to bring to the table if it would have been easier.
Exactly.
If that makes any sense. Yeah.
That makes too much sense almost, but it's totally the process. And it's, yeah, I hope anyone listening at any point during any of my podcasts never thinks that I'm trying to make them think that it's going to be easy.
Yeah.
Because the journey and the process isn't, and to me, it's not even supposed to be. That's kind of what makes it what it is.
And I've heard the phrase, the obstacle is the way. And I don't remember who said that, but it is so true. And I always tell people, when it's getting hard and you think, this isn't working, I should stop. This isn't working, I should change. This isn't working. And you start having those moments of doubt and start freaking out. Know that if you can just hang in there, even if it's by like the skin of your teeth, like dig in to something and just get through it, because you're going to have so much more clarity and so many insights and so much more richness to whatever it is that you do. So whatever you're struggling with, just stick it out. Just stick it out, because quitting is the fastest way to lose really the thing that's going to make you better at what you do.
That went full circle so well. The one thing you do is you just show up consistently and just stick it out and keep doing it. So that's awesome. All right, Rachel, we've got to talk about your business in passing. Could you now, please specifically tell the listener where to find you online and where to find out more about your business?
Yes, you can definitely find me over at rachelcook.com. It's RachelCook. And there you can take the Business Sweet Spot quiz, where you will get some strategies that you can start applying to your businesses to leverage your strengths and start really working smarter, not harder, so you can stick it out longer. And you can also find me all over social media, especially Facebook and Instagram, and that's Rachel Cook too.
Awesome. So that's RachelCook, Cook,
C-O-O-K. Yes.
So on social media, Rachel Cook, rachelcook.com. Also, the Get More Leads program, is that on your site?
Get More Clients. Yes, it is on my site. And there is a free on-demand workshop that you can take to learn how you can start filling your client docket ASAP.
Awesome. So we'll link to that. I'm Rachel Cook, as well as the 12-week yearbook was mentioned. I'll find a link to that. And The Obstacle is the Way was written by Ryan Holiday. Absolutely, absolutely brilliant book. I'll also link to that in the show notes for you when you're done walking, biking, working out, whatever it is you're doing right now. Rachel, once again, thank you so much for taking the time to join me. Thanks for sharing so much. And please just keep doing what you're doing, because it is awesome and inspiring to watch.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Rachel, thank you so much for joining me today. Thank you so much for sharing so openly. I really appreciate it. It was a fun conversation. I really, really enjoyed it. I hope you out there listening, I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did, as much as I enjoyed participating in it with Rachel. And I hope that you reach out to her, rachelcook.com, or track her down at Rachel Cook on social media. You'll be able to find her and follow up with some questions. Tell her you heard her on the show. I'm sure she would love to hear from you. So we've reached the point of the show where we need to go back. I have a full sheet of paper here of places to go back and check and to sort of see what I could dissect, see what I could pull out, let's say, of the conversation. And so I went back to 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 spots. I went back, then I went back again, then I went back one more time. The final time, I heard something that Rachel said that it didn't stand out to me the first few times, and I'm not sure why, because that last time I listened to it, it was so clear. It was that one thing. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
I have what I call an idea parking lot. It is a Google Doc where I just keep all those different ideas. I actually have multiple idea parking lots. Like I'll have one for blog posts and I'll have one for products I want to create. I'll even have one for things I know I shouldn't do, but I'm hoping I'll find a client who'll do it. I have different idea parking lots for all those things because I just know I don't have time to implement everything right now.
And that's the hack. Rachel, this is cool. I like this. I've written about this before and I've talked about this. This is something I've implemented in the last, I'm going to say, year myself, which I've never called them idea parking lots per se, but it totally, that's cool. It works. But I carry little notebooks. I believe they're Moleskin is the brand, but bought them from Target. They're really cheap. They're little paper notebooks and they fit in my back pocket of my jeans. And I carry them everywhere so that I can just jot down ideas for, like you said, blog posts, marketing ideas, guest ideas, anything. I'll just keep different lists so that you get it out of your head and can stop thinking about it and therefore move on to other things. But also it allows it, as Rachel says, she allows it to marinate so you know if you are doing the right next thing. When you don't sort of park them somewhere first to let them sort of sit and see if they are a good idea or not, you might take action too quick. And then you have that whole shiny object where you never actually complete everything because you're constantly coming up with new things and jumping around. So take these ideas, put them somewhere. Google Docs is great. If you're on a computer a lot, on your phone, everybody's got these little computers in their pocket. Just use the Notes app. Just use something really basic. Don't make it difficult. That's why I love the notebook because it really finally gets me out of a computer and just simplifies it with writing it down. And then as Rachel says at the very end, she does this because she knows that she doesn't have enough time to implement everything right now. Neither do I, neither do you. This is a great thing to become that self-aware, to have that awareness of, because none of us have enough time to implement everything. Don't try and trick yourself into thinking you do. But you don't want to lose these ideas and you want to know what to work on next. So start taking notes. Put it in your parking lot, put it in your Google Doc, put it in your notebook, put it on your desktop, on your phone. It doesn't matter. Do them, write them down or voice memo them, but keep them and they'll be there when you need them. Rachel, thank you very much. All right. Once again, Rachel, thank you very much. And that wraps it up for another episode. I thank you so much for stopping by. I hope the remainder of your summer is going very, very well and you're having a great time. And we're going to be right back at it. September. It's going to be good. And I'm looking forward to hopefully meeting some of you in Toronto in November. Stay tuned for more information on that. And yeah, stop by the website, hacktheentrepreneur.com. Check out Rachel's show notes, all links and Asana she talked about, Get More Clients program and the 12-week year. I'm going to check that book out too. I like that. I love that working in sort of project-based month on month. So I'm going to check that out too. So, it's been fun. Thank you so much for stopping by. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.